You're very welcome back to The Late Debate. Later tonight, we'll be discussing immigration to this country. 2 weeks after the Swiss voted to impose strict quotas on the number of immigrants, is there any appetite here for a similar move? Joining me tonight are Peter O'Loughlin, who plans to run as an independent candidate in the forthcoming European election. He's formerly of the National Independent Party. Minister of State for European Affairs Pascal Donoghue is here. Dr. Ronit Lenton, Professor of Sociology at Trinity College, and Dr. Jean-Pierre Ayanga, who is originally from the Democratic Republic of Congo, but he's lived here in Ireland for 17 years. First, though, we're going to talk about the ongoing nightmare that is the situation facing the people of Ukraine. The country of 45 million people bordering Russia to the east has been torn apart over the past 3 days, government troops and militiamen shooting dead protesters on the streets of the capital, Kiev. It's unclear how many have died so far, but it could be up to 100. The figure includes a number of police officers. The Ukraine Hotel, which dominates Independence Square, was transformed into a makeshift morgue and field hospital this morning after troops opened fire. This doctor was helping to treat the injured.
You see, there are a lot of dead bodies here already, at least five maybe. But I'm not sure, you know, I'm busy to help other people. Bullets, actually, bullets through the body. And the one who are lucky through limbs, who are not, lungs and heart, and they are, unfortunately, we cannot help in these conditions here to these people, unfortunately.
Well, Steve Rosenberg of the BBC spoke to Yuri, a first aid worker in the hotel, who described what he had seen.
After 7 or 8 o'clock, it starts real war, because they just start shooting into the people. And on the road, there was a lot of victims. We have a lot of very, very in bad condition people, and we have dead persons. We have 12 dead persons. They kill people. Directly, they kill people. They shoot directly in the head. They shoot directly in the neck. And we just want to ask all European people, all the world, they need to know what happened, that the police killed people.
The police today said that it was protesters shooting at them.
With what? With rocks? With bad words? It's very big a shame of our country and a big shame of our president.
So what do you think will happen now? The death toll in this conflict is rising almost by the day. How do you think things will end?
I don't know. I cannot. I'm not a god. And I don't know what will happen.
President Yanukovych has said that he believes in dialogue and compromise.
I don't believe in any word of our president. Because we saw all these 3 months of this big disaster. He promised that will be compromise, will be peace. In 1-2 hours, we see a big, big, epic fail of these words.
That was Yuri there speaking to the BBC's Steve Rosenberg. Well, last November, Ukraine's President Viktor Yanukovych U-turned on a free trade agreement with the European Union in favour of maintaining strong ties with the former ruler, Russia. And that led to weeks of peaceful protests. This week's catastrophic violence occurred after opposition MPs were denied the opportunity to discuss a return to the 2004 constitution, which would limit the president's powers and move presidential elections to this year. Well, half an hour ago, I spoke to RTE's European correspondent, Paul Cunningham, who's in Kiev. It had just gone 11:30, and he described the scene there tonight.
I guess I have to qualify by saying I'm just in one section of the city, which is the area that is effectively sealed off from the rest of Kiev. And here in Independence Square, I'm just spending the time walking around at the barricades, which are new ones, which have been established by protesters to try and ensure that police don't retake the ground they lost earlier on today when there was major clashes, major deaths. But a success insofar as that ground was secured by protesters on police. There have been some sporadic outbreaks of live gunfire, but it doesn't appear that either police or protesters have been injured.
How would you reflect on the day's events, Paul?
Well, I think it started off with some level of expectation. I was awake early in the morning. This was the morning where there was going to be some form of truce. I mean, people have always been cautious because we've heard about ceasefires that didn't take place, but nonetheless, it did seem as if this was going to be a good day. Then very quickly it spiraled downwards. There was gunfire. We've heard blame being apportioned on both sides, who started it. But the upshot of it was that people were dying, and dying very quickly. I'm staying in a hotel called Hotel Ukraine, and it very quickly was turned into an emergency room. There was a triage centre in which people were being decided who needed treatment immediately, who was critically injured, and unfortunately, within a short space of time, who was going to head to the morgue. And within, I don't know, about an hour and a half, 2 hours, 13 bodies ended up being taken to the hotel. So it ended up being a very, very nasty day indeed.
And who shot those people, Paul? Was it Yanukovych's soldiers and police, or was it these plainclothes militiamen who've been bussed in to Kiev from across the country?
Well, I could see that there were soldiers on buildings, and they did have firearms. I can certainly tell you that all of the injured who we saw at this section were shot by security forces. I can't imagine they were shooting themselves. I could see them being shot on the street in front of me. Yet it is also, has to be said at this stage, that I did see protesters with weapons, with semi-automatic weapons, with shotguns, with handguns as well. According to police sources, three police officers were killed due to gunshots, although one of the state services has said only one policeman died. But I think it's fair to point out that there was shooting coming on both sides of the barricades, but in terms of the death toll, I saw 13 bodies here in Hotel Ukraine, and I saw another 10 bodies down on Independence Square itself. So it was certainly the protesters who were taking the beating.
And this awful violence is now in its third day, Paul. Are the protesters determined to stay on the streets?
They certainly are. And what I detected this evening was that they felt they were safer here in Independence Square, where there are thousands of them gathered, then outside in the city. As you mentioned earlier on, there are some paramilitary militias who have been moving around town. They have been accused of hitting men and women, of beating people up. On one occasion, they've been blamed of the death of a journalist. Obviously, that has not been confirmed, but those are the stories that are going around. And so from the demonstrators' point of view, who I was talking to tonight in Independence Square, they were saying they were happy to stay together, and they were determined to stay, but there was this sense that things were becoming an undercurrent of nastiness, which also meant they felt safer here too.
But is there a big problem as far as the protesters are concerned in terms of trying to bring this violence to an end? Is that there's no clear leader for the protesters? There's no clear champion?
No, there are several political parties represented here. Some of them work well together. Others don't associate each other at all. It's been clear that the political leaders don't have control of all of the protesters here who are here. The leaders have spoken about there have been agents provocateurs here who have been trying to cause trouble and get a response from the police. So it is a chaotic situation. And yet when it comes to certain things, you would find the vast bulk of the opposition do want elections. They do want to see the end of the president. They do want to see laws which have been preventing people from protesting being lifted. They do want constitutional change as well. So there's a lot that binds them together. And from what I can see on the ground, people are working well together, but it would be wrong to say that they are unified or that there is a single person able to tell them what to do. That just isn't the case.
And on the other side, Paul, in terms of the government, Yanukovych has appointed the head of the Navy to replace the former head of the Defence Forces. And by all accounts, the head of the Navy is very much a yes man. Is there any sign that Yanukovych is prepared to back down?
Well, one of the things that is difficult, I think, when we're representing the story, is that I've been inside Independence Square. It's been sealed off, so I haven't been in a position as of yet to get outside this circle of steel and to be able to talk to the government side and be able to represent what they're saying. That's something we're hoping to do tomorrow. When it comes to the president, he has been arguing that democracy flows from elections. So when the elections, the people are able to speak. He has won the election. He has a mandate, and he should be able to continue to govern with that mandate. And he accuses the European Union of saying, you talk about upholding democracy, but it's only when it's with someone who you don't like. Then the rules are turned on their head. when it comes to negotiations, he has argued that simply the opposition are looking for far too much in the context of an elected leader who has a mandate and is not obliged to stand down at all. And so that's where his main argument has been coming from, and he hasn't been seen to be in any way sort of talking himself down from that position. He's not being showing any major signs of compromise. He feels the right is on his side, and he feels that in such a case, he shouldn't have to back down in the first place.
And just finally, Paul, I know that you're ensconced there within that section of Independence Square. Have you managed to ascertain or establish if anything is happening outside of Kiev? Are similar protests happening anywhere else in Ukraine?
Well, I think the first thing that struck me was just driving from the airport until you reach this area was that, you know, this is a huge country of 45, 46 million people. Kiev is a massive city. And if driving from the airport, it looks like any other city in Eastern Europe. Life was going on. The restaurants were full, cars were in the streets. So I think that it reminded me a little bit like Belfast. If you just watch the television, you might think that the whole city is convulsed. That certainly isn't the case. But it is true to say that in other cities around Ukraine, there have been demonstrations, there have been public buildings taken over. They have been showing support for what's been taking place here. But you equally have to have regard for the fact that in eastern Ukraine, they're solidly behind their president, and they feel that the European Union is interfering in its internal affairs and stoking up trouble here in Kiev. So it remains a polarised situation, not just in the capital, but right around the country too.
That was RT's Europe correspondent Paul Cunningham talking to me from Kiev about half an hour ago. Minister Pascal Donoghue. Pascal, you were in Kiev back in November when the talks between the European Union and President Yanukovych's government broke down. Did the EU leave a vacuum after that, which was ultimately filled by this violence over the last few days?
Well, the European Union, in the aftermath of the breakdown of that agreement, always made very, very clear that the door was open to the Ukrainian government to form sign the partnership agreement or to develop a new form of a relationship with the European Union. So that offer was always there. The European Union's maintained a very strong presence in the Ukraine since then. There were two significant developments that did happen in the aftermath, though, of that meeting. The first one is the security forces took a far more aggressive role in relation to the protests that have been happening across that period. And the second thing is a number of laws were passed by the Ukrainian parliament in relation to ability of people to assemble and in terms of their ability to organise themselves. And that very, very quickly changed the tension, I believe, within the country that led to some of the awful scenes that we're seeing at the moment.
But I'm just wondering, could the EU perhaps have done more? Because on the other side of things, you have Vladimir Putin giving Ukraine $15 billion, buying $3 billion just in the last few days of Ukrainian bonds. That's pretty hard to compete with.
Well, the partnership agreement that was made available to the Ukraine and negotiated with them was also negotiated with Georgia and Moldova. And those two countries signed up to the agreement. And what you're seeing is you're seeing two different models of agreement and integration. You're seeing one from the European Union, which is about agreement. It's about process. It's about respecting the rule of law, about values. And then there was one that was made available to the Ukraine from Russia that did have a harder edge to it in terms of the availability of money. But it's also an agreement that two neighbouring countries to the Ukraine wanted to sign, and that a significant number of people within the Ukraine wanted to see signed as well.
But I suppose the point is perhaps with Russia there, is Russia too centrally involved, too much influence? It could be argued that Russia has given up on Georgia after the war there 6 years ago now. They're no longer interested. They've lost that battle. But someone said over the last 24 hours, you know, Russia without Ukraine is simply a country. Russia with Ukraine is an empire.
And this gigantic historical affinity between the two countries. I mean, Paul made a very accurate point there that there is a very different feeling between the east of Ukraine and the west of the Ukraine regarding the countries and regions which they would want to associate themselves with. And Russia as a single country with a different heritage and outlook to the European Union is clearly capable of mobilising and doing things that a collection of 28 democracies can't. But nonetheless, what those 28 democracies can do is put together a framework and a set of organising themselves that, despite all its difficulties that we're aware of, is still hugely attractive to a very, very large number of people within the Ukraine. And I mean, the point that you opened up there regarding the aftermath of the failure of those negotiations, I think what's critical now is the role that the role that the union can play now in terms of dealing with this.
What is that role? I mean, we have the foreign ministers meeting today and agreeing visa bans and freezing of assets and so on. But is that going to resolve this?
Well, I think there's two different roles the European Union and Europe will play in relation to this. Because it's vital to remember that while the European Union has a lot of competencies and abilities developed in this area, of course, individual member states and the stances that they take are also crucial in relation to this. So in terms of individual countries, well, you have the foreign ministers of Poland, France and Germany there at the moment. Mm-hmm. And then you have all the other foreign ministers, including the representative of those three countries, meeting in Brussels today. And the approach of the union, I think, is going to run along two tracks. The first one is an immediate response to the absolute unacceptable levels of violence that we're seeing over the last 3 days, that have now between 60 and 70 people killed. And the response to that is in terms of the sanctions, visas, actions against assets that have already been outlined. And then the second role the European Union and the countries within Europe will have to play is putting together a process by which all of this can be peacefully resolved. Paul's already said it, this is a country of 45 million people on our borders. And it's within the interest of Ireland, not to mention countries near it, that this be peacefully dealt with.
Because it's the potential for catastrophe, even worse than what we're seeing over the last 3 days, is enormous. Well, I mean, there was an analyst from Jane's Defence Weekly on BBC last night saying that unless the EU sort this out now, and the United States, unless they intervene now, this could become Europe's Somalia.
Well, if you remember the massive scale of difficulty and horror that was caused in Bosnia-Herzegovina, the breakup of Yugoslavia in the 1990s, and the huge terror and conflict that unfolded that part of Europe then, scale that up to thinking we're talking about a highly modern country, 45 million people within it, with a huge amount of conflict already inherent in it, and a regional dimension in terms of Russia and other countries that's very, very important. I know the ministers that we've talked about are already active in that area. Chancellor Merkel, other prime ministers are contacting the Ukraine at the moment to say that the European Union wants to play an active mediation role in relation to this. And the one point that I would stress, which is an evident point, but a vital one all the same, is we do obviously need Russia to change its view regarding what's happening within the Ukraine. They can clearly play a very, very positive role within the world, as they are doing elsewhere at the moment. And we need the huge level of influence that they have to be used now to bring some stability to what's there at the moment.
But Russia see Ukraine as an integral part of their sphere of influence. It's time the EU said to Russia, Ukraine is a sovereign nation.
Well, of course, I mean, that presupposes that the European Union has... a degree of powers and competences in that area that allows it to do it. I mean, this is something that lots of different member states, I think, are going to really reach a collective decision in relation to. We want to play an active role in the Ukraine in terms of dealing with this, and we will. There is a very, very significant group of people within the Ukraine that see their future within Europe, who see themselves as a European country. And we will play a very peaceful and constructive role in dealing with this. This is something that, in terms of its scale and its ability to cause huge conflict within the country and elsewhere, means that it's in Europe's absolute interest to resolve this. And I'm very confident that Europe will do, and the European Union will do all it can to do this.
OK, well, continuing coverage of the situation in Kiev on our news programmes here on RTE and on our website, rte.ie. A reminder of